All right, remember, the machine knows if you're lying. First statement, Carvana will give you a real offer on your car all online.
False.
True, actually. Oh. You can sell your car in minutes.
False? That's gotta be...
True again. Carvana will pick up your car from your door, or you can drop it off at one of their car vending machines.
Sounds too good to be true, so true!
Finally caught on. Nice job. Honesty isn't just their policy, it's their entire model. Sell your car today, too.
Carvana.
Pickup fees may apply.
Hi everyone, my name is Andra Stanoyou and you're listening to the Healthy Debate Show on UK Health Radio and Podcast. Imposter syndrome has been described by psychologists for the first time in 1978. According to a 2020 review, 9 to 82% of people experience imposter syndrome. One study found that about 70% of all people have felt like an imposter at some point in their lives. It usually affects those who are highly capable perfectionists, like HR professionals, for example, that are expected to know a little bit about everything from mental health to finance, economy, and business. To help us understand and explain the imposter syndrome from a HR professional perspective, we have Rachel Norrington, a HR mentor and coach and founder of the Happy HR Coaching Practice. Hi, Rachel. Welcome to the Healthy Debate Show.
Hi, Andra. Thank you for having me.
Please tell us a bit about yourself and your work and, of course, about Happy HR Coaching Practice.
Yeah, so I've worked in HR for 20 years now. My whole career has always been in HR, and it's changed hugely over the years that I've been practicing as a HR professional. And having worked across several industries at a senior level with leadership teams, you think you've seen everything in terms of how people are looked after and the working environments and the different cultures. And I just have a real passion for helping people in the working environments and making sure that they can be the best that they can be in their jobs. And I believe it's all about life balance as well. And so I set up the Happy HR Coaching and Mentoring because I think what I've seen over the years as a HR professional, it can sometimes be quite a lonely place because of the nature of the role that we do. And so actually I thought I can give back to other people in the same fields as me and help to coach and mentor them in their roles and overcome some of their challenges and actually share some of my experiences and best practice with people to help them enjoy a successful career in HR.
It's very interesting what you said, because probably the tendency to go for a career in HR, I'm just making assumptions, but maybe that's the case, is usually the passion or the love for working with people and providing this service and care. But then you also said that it can be quite a lonely place. So I'm just trying to understand what attracts you the most to this type of role in HR.
I think you're right. As HR professionals, we're naturally attracted to the role because we like working with people, we want to help people, and we're natural nurturers of people and have an interest. But I think when you get into the role, because of the nature of how you're supporting businesses and you're working on HR strategy and, you know, some of the issues that we're dealing with on a day-to-day people basis that affects individual people, so, you know, whether it be an employee relations issue, disciplinaries or grievances or somebody's well-being, they're all of a confidential nature. So as much as you have an interest in people and you want to help them, so you want to help people with their well-being, and, you know, if they're having a challenging time at work because they're not performing, and it's understanding what might be impacting somebody's performance, you can't then offload that onto somebody else within the workplace. So it becomes lonely because you can't necessarily have the close relationships that other roles and people might have in organisations because of the confidential nature. So you end up carrying a lot on your shoulders and in your head, particularly if you're a standalone role in HR.
So you mentioned that the role of HR has changed in the past years or in recent years. Tell me a bit more about that.
So clearly, we've had the pandemic. So that's been a massive accelerator for change for the HR profession, because, you know, overnight, HR professionals across the world have had to learn how to deal with the challenges that COVID brought for the working environment, and particularly in the UK, you know, dealing with furlough and you know, huge amounts of individuals overnight being told to stay at home, or there's no work for them, or, you know, implementing new policies and processes around remote working. And then around that as well, looking after people's well-being, because all of a sudden they've gone from working in an office to, you know, working at home overnight, and they're isolated, and it's a completely different setup and scenario as well, because, you know, they were homes, you know, people were homeschooling families and all sorts of other carer responsibilities. So, you know, all of a sudden overnight, the profession of HR was much needed, I guess, role within an organization, whereas before, sometimes, you know, they wouldn't necessarily have a, you know, a chair at the table in terms of that role, because they weren't, depending on the nature of the business and the organization, sometimes, you know, the role of HR is just seen as that policy department that, you know, puts the rules and procedures in place, and not necessarily a strategic role. So, you know, it was all about looking after the well-being of people. Then, you know, after we've had the pandemic, we now have, you know, the financial economic climate that we're dealing with as well. And so, and there's a huge shift in terms of workers and, you know, what's motivating them and what they want from their jobs as well. So there's huge challenges at the moment around how do you reward employees, what benefits do you provide to them, and actually how can you support them through the financial impact that people are feeling right now because of the cost of living increase. So you go from being a HR professional that, you know, was already responsible for engagement policies and procedures in an organization, you know, recruiting the right people, the talent in the organization. And now they're also responsible for the well-being of people as well, making sure that, you know, from a welfare perspective, that they're working safely, but also, you know, there's a lot around the mental health at the moment. And it all has an impact on the productivity of people. So for a business to be successful, ultimately, people have to be, you know, productive as well and service clients in the right way. So there's a lot to get right for an organization to run smoothly, but people are key.
So where does this leave the HR professionals? Because as I was mentioning in my introduction, there is this expectation for HR professionals to be able to, you know, cover almost 360 the issues of a business, which wasn't happening maybe 20 years ago when HR was more administrative. That's on one hand. And on the other hand, there is this idea of maybe savior, you know, that's in the back of HR professionals' mind, thinking that, you know, I can't really complain because I'm supposed to be the backbone, you know, of the organization in terms of giving people what they need. And then you end up being, as you mentioned, quite lonely, and quite, you know, confused about your real role and responsibilities, and almost, you know, blurring the boundaries, isn't it? Where do you start and when does the business start, and the challenges that the people present to you? So where do you think the well-being sits in this issue? And how are you supporting HR professionals? Because I guess that's the core, isn't it? How are you supporting the HR professionals that are struggling with their well-being and finding their place?
Yeah, and I think that I was reading a report recently, and it was Sage's The Changing Face of HR, and they found of the people that they surveyed, two-thirds of the HR professionals are thinking about leaving the industry, and 81% feel burnt out. And I think that's quite a, you know, for me, that's quite a sad statistic, because HR is a great career to have, and, you know, there's so many opportunities when working as a HR professional, and it's really sad that people have got to the point where they're thinking about leaving the profession because of the stresses that they're experiencing in their roles. And the impacts that they have is that, you know, because sometimes it can be such a reactive role, you go into the profession, I think sometimes thinking, oh, actually, I can make a real difference here. But depending on the organisation, sometimes you can get caught up in, you know, some of the bureaucracy. And obviously, you know, it depends on what's going on within a business. So you could be involved in, you know, restructuring and making people redundant, and that, you know, obviously having an impact on individuals' lives. That's not a nice feeling to be dealing with when you're kind of putting those plans together. And I think sometimes, you know, HR get a bad rap because from a business, you know, an employee perspective, you know, because there isn't necessarily an understanding around what the role of HR is, you're seen as the HR police, or, you know, HR have made that decision. Yeah. So, you know, it's all about, you know, it's all seen as HR have made that decision. Actually, no, it wasn't HR that made the decision. That, you know, there's been a consultation with the business leaders or the relevant people that were involved in the decision-making process. HR are there to help facilitate that process and provide the right advice and support to make sure that people are treated fair and equally. And I think that can lead to overwhelm for HR professionals. And also, like, you know, like I said, you can be lonely. So, can you carry those ideas around in your head or the weight of that on your shoulders because you can't necessarily hand that over to somebody else? And I think because of that, it leads to those feelings of self-doubt in terms of, you know, the advice and support that, you know, as a HR professional that you're giving to a business. And there isn't always a black and white answer. There isn't always, right, this is absolutely the right way to do things because of the way legislation is. So it's understanding employment legislation and being up to date with that and understanding how to apply that then in relation to the policies and procedures that you have in the workplace to make the right decisions. And I think that's then, you know, as a result of all of that, and everything else that is going on externally for an individual, you know, in their own personal lives as well, that's where the feelings of imposter syndrome start to rise. So, and particularly as well, the people that I've worked with in HR, you know, they've generally been new to HR as well. So they have this feeling of, I've got to do everything, because when you work in the profession, you're seen as that go-to person. You are kind of like expected to know the answers to most things, but it's more about understanding, okay, who are the right people to go to and being able to, you know, facilitate a conversation. And so I think it can be quite overwhelming for people at times when you're first into the role. So I help them by giving them that space and someone to talk to that's independent to the business, where they can offload and talk about some of the issues that they're facing and help them to find the solutions that they need to take back into the business. And I believe that quite often, you know, the people that I work with, they always have the answers within them. But it's just being confident enough sometimes to go back to the business and say, actually, this is the route that I think we need to take. So it's being able to talk it through, get the clarity that they need and that thinking space with another HR professional to help them kind of find the solutions and move forward with the right actions. And through that, then they become more confident, because the more they can take the steps forward, the more they feel confident in the role that they're doing. I think it can be quite hard, especially if you're a standalone HR person, when you're working with a leadership team who don't always agree with what you're saying or suggesting, because they just want to press on with, you know, hitting, I don't know, financially, for you know, example, they just need to hit a number to get the business to profit, or you know, they just want to secure a client, or a client's not happy with a particular person within the team. And so they, you know, they just want to sometimes just want to find a way to exit that person from the organization. It's not always as simple as exiting someone from an organization. It's understanding, well, what are the reasons why? Why does that client not like that person? What's going on there? Is there some kind of discrimination going on? What's the why is there a problem? So I think from a HR perspective, helping them to work through those thoughts, ideas within their own minds helps them then to recognize their own feelings when they might be feeling uncomfortable, and how to deal with that so that they don't, because it's an important part of the growth in terms of the career, is, you know, getting comfortable with the uncomfortable. I really like that quote.
Because I think it does summarize the job, isn't it? It's about how you explain merging the agendas, you know, of the business, HR agenda with all the other agendas in the businesses, making sure that you're available for people enough for them to feel comfortable and be engaged, but enough also to be objective. So I think it's very, very difficult to strike a balance, the right balance, especially when you are at the beginning of your career. So from my perspective, from what I'm hearing in terms of the services that you're providing, I think it's great that you took on this this role and this responsibility to coach HR professionals. And the main benefit that I see in this is the fact that you have the experience to provide also mentorship. So it's going to be an advice that's, you know, valid. It's based on your experience and your knowledge, but also to shape the conversation in a very coaching way that will help them see the responses, because you were mentioning that, you know, the majority of them, even though they're at the beginning, they kind of know where they're standing. It just gives them that confidence. So from that perspective, I think it's a full approach to the issues that you specified as being, you know, the core challenges of HR professionals. In terms of imposter syndrome being seen as negative, you know, it does come with a sense of guilt most of the times, and it does, because most people that have imposter syndrome, they're perfectionists. They want to do everything by the book. And HR, you know, it is written, yeah, in law, you do have the guidance, but there's also an exception to an exception, isn't it? And it's about flexibility and, you know, problem solving and critical thinking. So you kind of, you know, there are lots of areas to explore when you're making a decision. So because of that, you know, imposter syndrome is seen quite negative. Can we get anything good out of the imposter syndrome? Does it help in any way?
Absolutely. I think there's a lot of talk around imposter syndrome. And I think we automatically go within and think, oh, God, imposter syndrome, that's a bad thing. I over-procrastinate on this. Or, you know, I don't like to delegate. I like to do everything myself. I fly solo. I'm that continuous learner in terms of I have to know everything before I can move forward. And I think, unfortunately, and because of that, imposter syndrome gets that kind of the bad name in terms of that label. But actually what it's about is the feelings that we experience when we're feeling uncomfortable. So I think the positive of imposter syndrome is actually once we recognize why we feel what we feel when we feel it, actually we can turn it into a positive. It can become your superpower. Once you can understand and you can develop techniques then to support yourself. So, you know, if you know that you're a perfectionist, well, that's not a bad thing, because we need people in the workplace that, you know, respect quality and standards. And so being a perfectionist, you know that that particular person in your team will always make sure that they dot the I's and cross the T's. So there's a role for people to play depending on kind of how they deal with that. And I just, so I think that actually imposter syndrome, you can flip it around and it becomes a positive then, and you can learn to play to the strengths of the people in your team in relation to that by identifying where they maybe feel that, oh God, I'm you know, I've got that self-doubt around myself, or actually I like to do things on my own. I don't always want to be a part of a team. You know, there were some people that just want to kind of go off with a project, run with it, and just get the job done. And there is a time and place for that. But it's also understanding that, you know, sometimes you need to come back into what those feelings are. And Dr. Valerie Young, she identified 5 types of imposter syndrome. So she identified the expert, perfectionist, the natural genius, the soloist, and the superhero. And I think if we all understand what that means in terms of those kind of personalities, actually we can all relate to those in one form or another. And I think we all suffer with imposter syndrome at some point in our lives, whether we're male or female, depending on what's going on, because it can either be that reoccurring pattern that we've never really identified. And so, you know, it's something that whenever that particular situation comes up for a person, we, you know, it's how we deal with things. And, you know, you could, I don't know, for example, speaking on stage, for example, you know, being asked to talk about a subject, it could be like, well, I can't do that. What do I know? I don't have enough knowledge. You know, I'm not as good as X, Y, Z. And although they're all the feelings of imposter syndrome, but actually if you find a way to overcome that and go out there and stand on stage and be that expert and talk about the subject that you've been asked to talk about, actually then you'll overcome, you know, that imposter syndrome, that little voice in the back of your head will always be there, but it will get quieter and quieter and quieter. Yes, I just think, I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing. I think it's just understanding where you experience feelings of self-doubt and where you might lack confidence. And if you can identify what particular type that you might be dealing with at any one point in time, then it helps. You can use that to your advantage.
I did try to identify, you know, my boundaries in terms of my perfectionism. And what I found was that someone at some point told me that, you know, 85% job done is 100% job done.
Yeah.
So that was such a good lesson for me, because it helped me kind of, you know, rebalance things in my mind and not just be utterly obsessed with the standard that's unrealistic, especially, you know, in some contexts, it can be quite a challenge to keep up 100% with things at all times. So this is what I've done to kind of, you know, calm myself down and reduce this little voice that is telling me that I have to be in a particular way. So I would like us to take a short break, but after we're back, I would like us to discuss about some particular cases of HR professionals that you worked with, and maybe going through into some techniques that you used for them, or what was the issue and how did you manage to, you know, coach and mentor them, and what was the positive result. So we'll be back with Rachel discussing imposter syndrome in HR profession.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
All right, remember, the machine knows if you're lying. First statement, Carvana will give you a real offer on your car all online.
False.
True, actually. Oh. You can sell your car in minutes.
False? That's gotta be...
True again. Carvana will pick up your car from your door, or you can drop it off at one of their car vending machines.
Sounds too good to be true, so true.
Finally caught on. Nice job. Honesty isn't just their policy, it's their entire model. Sell your car today, too.
Carvana.
Pickup fees may apply.
Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
And we're back with Rachel. Rachel is a HR mentor and coach, and she's the founder of Happy HR, the Happy HR coaching practice. And today we're discussing imposter syndrome. Rachel, I was kind of giving you a bit of an insight of the techniques that I've used in the past to rebalance my thoughts and bring myself into a more functional type of thinking rather than very obsessed for perfection. Tell me a bit about some of your cases, your clients. I didn't mean to call them cases. It just sounded wrong, isn't it? Your client just sounded very HR. Your clients, your customers, the people that you're working with, and what were some of the challenges and how you helped them be more effective and kind of escape the imposter syndrome.
Yeah, so I think what I find is that one particular client, she was new, she'd been recently newly promoted, and there was a lot of self-doubt in there and confidence in terms of the role that she'd stepped into, and also self-comparison to people that she viewed as more experienced than herself. And so we worked on with her in particular. I used to work with her in terms of her language. So she used to be quite negative about how she talked about herself, and some of the, you know, kind of how she would go about doing things. Oh, I'm not as good as them, or, you know, I look at them and they're doing X, Y, Z and I'm not doing that. I spent time working with that particular client around, okay, well, what's your role? What's that person's role? And identifying kind of the differences and actually helping her to understand that the role that she was in within the HR team was different to the person that she was comparing herself to. So actually there's no kind of, there's no comparison there because the role was completely different. And then talking about, okay, well, the language that she was using for herself and understanding kind of, you know, that negative voice where we tell ourselves we can't do something, and started to kind of reframe the language that she was using so that she was then starting to be more confident in herself and in her role and how she managed different situations that she faced at work, particularly when she was going in. She had a new line manager as well, and she had two line managers. So she had one that was worked abroad, and another in the UK, and so just being able to kind of work with those line managers in the right way, and understanding actually what their perspectives are. So she used to, you know, the natural assumptions that we make as individuals as well. To catching those. So some of the techniques I used was things like actually sit down and have that conversation. So kind of act out the conversations that person wanted to say. So in this particular circumstance, she wanted to secure herself a more flexible way of working, and also, secure a pay increase as well. So it was about having that conversation and what was she going to say and what were the reasons for it. And part of that, we worked on kind of what were her successes in the role, what had the achievements been. I think very often we don't celebrate our own successes. We see them as very small and we move on to the next thing. So actually just taking that time out to understand what she had achieved in her role as well, was really helpful. And then the other thing that I do is I work with clients to visualize their success as well. So they have when they're thinking about their careers and where they want to be, particularly if they're new in role, I say to them, okay, so where do you want to be in 6 months' time, for example, and what do you want to be known for in your role? So we talk about kind of what that timeline is. So we start off with in 6 months' time, I want to be here, what that visual, you know, visualize that success and what it looks like. And then work backwards and break it down into really small chunks. Because sometimes, again, when you have a goal, that can be such a big leap and such a big gap to like, oh my God, I'm here. How do I get to here? So breaking it down and turning it into steps. I think when it comes to the imposter syndrome side of it as well, it's writing down like what type of imposter syndrome fits with like your measure of competency. Because again, like imposter syndrome is about how you kind of how competent you think you are. And then what are the feelings that you experience with that, and write it down. And then how does that affect you? Because I think by writing it down as well, if you're a visual person, it helps you to kind of understand why you behave in a certain way. And then you, it helps you to then identify ways to move forward to deal with that.
Rachel, you gave us so many techniques. You convinced us all. But I do want to come back on the first client you mentioned and the fact that you supported her with imposter syndrome. And whilst you were talking, there was one thought that came to my mind. And I was thinking about, you know, in this particular situation, in this case, did imposter syndrome come with this new role, or was it something historical? Was it something that was quite well embedded and was something that was more related to the personality and the choices of the person rather than the context?
It was due to the situation. So this is where this is to do with the work culture, and this is where I'm so passionate about making sure that the working environments are right for people, because the working environment absolutely has an impact on people's feelings and therefore their imposter syndrome within the workplace. Because by the nature of the teams and the line managers that we're working with, they have an impact on how we do things, why we do things, and the way they make us feel. And in this particular situation, my client had just returned from maternity leave, and the person that had been in maternity cover had then been employed to taken on the role on a permanent basis. And when she returned from maternity leave, she'd been put into another role. So as a result of that, there was a lot of self-doubt around her ability in the role that she had done. And actually it was, you know, it was just the way that things had been communicated weren't particularly well. But the way I worked with her was, well, actually, maybe let's talk about your skills and your experience. And when you look at, you know, that maybe they were better suited to the role that you've been put into. It's not necessarily connected to the fact that you've been on maternity leave. And I think, you know, the way that things are communicated as well is so important, because if it's not done well, it can leave us wondering why, and then think we're not good enough. What have we done wrong? And actually in this situation, it in the end, she performed, you know, the performance in the role was really great. There was a lot of recognition for the great stuff that she was achieving in her role. So it was just, you know, in the beginning, actually if things had been done differently, maybe she wouldn't have felt the way that she felt.
All right. So the majority of, it's not the majority, I'm making an assumption. So I'm assuming that some of your clients, some of your customers are leaders in the business. And this makes it more challenging when it comes to imposter syndrome, isn't it? What's the impact on their teams and how you can help them? Because when you're dealing with someone who has a standalone role and not is not connected in any shape or form with a team, you kind of deal with their coaching and it ends up there to some extent. Of course, it's influencing, you know, the relationships, the partnerships, but it's different when you have a team. And you kind of have to manage your emotions and their emotions, and you need to set the tone. So what's happening with leaders that suffer from imposter syndrome, and how can you help them?
Yeah, I think when you're a leader, it's really tough, because you're seen as being at a certain position, and therefore you have a certain skill set and experience behind you in that particular role. And so when you're experienced feelings of imposter syndrome, that can be really tough to deal with because you feel like you can't show that vulnerability. I think that the workplaces are changing now in that, you know, people are starting to, as a leader, it's recognized that to show vulnerability, you know, we're only human at the end of the day. So people, you know, that there is that there, but I still think there's a lot to be done. And the impact as well is, you know, for example, if you are, I had a client, you know, who was really a perfectionist in everything that she did, and she used to take a long time to put together presentations for the board and things. And she had a team member underneath her who dealt with the kind of the employee relations. But my client at the time, when we were talking about her workload and trying to find some balance for her in terms of her working life and her home life, it turns out she was taking things off of her team member because she was concerned about the quality of the way a letter might be written. So rather than feeding back to the team member, she would just do it for her effectively. And so we had a whole conversation around that. The appraisal was coming up for the individual. And I said, well, actually, how do you think that that might be making your team member feel in? And she said, oh, I hadn't really thought about it from that perspective. And actually, she then went away after our coaching session and had a conversation with the team member about, you know, like how she feeling in her role at the time. And they kind of identified another way to deal with things. So they looked at getting her a buddy in the organization so that then this team member could grow in her role. The line manager could go and do her job, but actually also still delegate her to-do list, which gave her more balance in her working day because she wasn't then trying to do the job of two people. So yeah, it can have a real massive, it can actually have a massive impact on teams as well. Because there's, you know, as that leader, if they're trying to control everything because they're worried or concerned about how things are going to reflect on them in terms of that responsibility for the productivity of the team or the success of a particular part of a business, they can be, you know, they can be taking things away from their team, which means they're not getting the job satisfaction or the career growth that they're looking for.
So absolutely, and I think that's the biggest challenge, isn't it? Marrying the two and making sure that your imposter syndrome doesn't feed your team in any way, because once they sense that they don't trust you, or they don't trust the trust you have in yourself, even if it's subconscious, isn't it? It starts breaking the loyalty contract, isn't it? And the psychological contract. And there's a bit of doubt that settles there. So Rachel, let's take a few minutes of break. And then once we're back, I want us to go back on one of your previous ideas regarding life work-life balance for HR professionals. So we'll be back with Rachel Norrington in a couple of minutes.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
And we're back with Rachel. We're discussing imposter syndrome. Rachel is a HR professional, a HR coach and mentor, and she's the founder of The Happy HR. Rachel, tell us about work-life balance. Can HR achieve this? Because from my perspective and from what I've heard today, it feels a bit like they're not really counselors or psychotherapists, but there is a lot of emotional stress and a lot of emotions to manage and dynamics there in terms of relationships in the business on top of the day-to-day work. So is there such thing as work-life balance for HR professionals?
I would say I like to call it life balance, because I think we quite often, by calling it work-life balance, we separate work from life, and actually work is part of our life.
Shouldn't we, Rachel? I'm confused now. I wasn't expecting that.
Well, work is part of our life, isn't it?
It is.
We go to work, we choose a profession, and hopefully we enjoy what we do 90% of the time. But, you know, within that, we have life, we have everything else that goes on in our life as well. So I do think that sometimes when we separate work from life, that can cause an issue for us, because I do believe that the working world is changing. I think it's about having the right boundaries in place to make sure that we have we are living our best life possible. So, and that's where I came up with the happy HR, because I think as a HR professional, it's important that we know where our happy place is and that we're happy in our roles. And I think that we can get so caught up in our jobs because we care and we do take everything on, that actually we give away all our boundaries. And that's where then HR professionals become unhappy, because we take all those feelings and emotions home with us and don't always have an outlet to deal with that. And it then builds up over time and obviously has an impact on our own well-being. So that's where I work with people to talk to them about, okay, well, what does life look like for you? What boundaries do you need to put in place? And that could be diary management. So where I'm working with clients with young children, for example, you know, it's what's important to them at the end of the day is being able to switch off that laptop, go home and do bedtime and story time. And then put their children to bed. I've worked with one client who wanted to increase her working day but didn't want to lose that kind of that admin day. So we talked about, okay, well, let's keep that day as an admin day, but you put the boundaries in place with the leadership team and tell them that this is a non-meeting day, but you're available, you know, to take calls and things, but actually you're focusing on the strategy and the things that they're asking you to do to support the business. So I think there's just different ways of looking at it in terms of that life balance.
Well, you made me change my mind, so I will use life balance moving forward. You've convinced me.
Oh, good.
Well, Rachel, it's been so great, you know, spending time with you and talking about imposter syndrome. I think it's so important for so many professions, and but especially HR, due to the nature of the beast. tell us, where can we find you on social media? I know you have a great website. I know you're having some programs that you're considering with your customers. So tell us a bit about that.
Yeah, so I like to think of the coaching and mentoring support that I give as a bit like going to a spa. So I do, there's an opportunity for people to book the happy HR hour with me. And that's an hour of talking through the issue that their burning issue and helping them find ways to move forward with it and solutions to put in place. I liken it to a spa, because you go in feeling really stressed and harassed and by the end of it you come out and you feel relaxed and you feel reinvigorated and motivated and energized to take on the one thing that's in front of you. So, and I do think that the experience of coaching and mentoring can feel like that. So yeah, you can find me on LinkedIn under Rachel Norrington. Look me up there, or you can go to www.thehappyhr.co.uk.
Rachel, thank you so much for your time. I wish you best of luck with your coaching and also in the other projects that I know you're involved. And it was a pleasure talking to you. So hopefully we'll get you back soon with another hot topic on HR, because I absolutely loved today's conversation.
Oh, me too. Thank you for having me, Andra.
Thank you, Rachel.